El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Seems like the whole world is
black holes. You're so ominous.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, the oil disaster.
There are quotes from Doug Suttles that say no one has been barred access to talk to the media.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and of course, our web address is philhendryshow.com, where you can go and check out this show on video as well as audio, and everybody doing it, you know, just go on over to our website and get a backstage pass. You can watch us as well as listen to us here on our website. We also have the show available for download the next day. We got a big meeting this week to eventually make our show available through iTunes for download. And a whole lot of other things that have come to pass, including picking up some of that hardware, Bud, you know, for 2001.
Yeah, you guys had to get another. Why you got to get another computer?
Yeah, you said it's on DAT tape.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's on DAT tape. 2001, the archives of 2001 Phil Hendry Show are on DAT tape.
So what you got to get a computer for?
I don't know, man. Maybe they got to hook the DAT machine up to it.
Yeah, you gotta, see, this is the thing I keep telling you about this, you know.
Yeah, you see, you don't want to get a day planner, man.
What's a day planner? You can't, what is it with you and day planner?
If you have a day planner, then you know everything you got to do.
Yeah.
What is it with a day planner and me having to get the day 2001 onto a DAT, out of DAT tapes into a computer? It's got nothing to do with a day planner.
You
got to
know what you're doing, though, man.
Yeah, see, you're all messed. You're confused about it. That's the only way you'll get the 2001 in there.
Are you a couple of jackballs or something, man? How is it me getting a day planner going to get the 2001 archives up on the site any sooner?
Because. Didn't you say you had to get a computer?
And we did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't know that you did.
We did, and guess what? I got it without a day planner.
You sure?
That's pretty good. I got to hand it to you.
You guys really love day planners, don't you?
I'm telling you, they remind me of how to do everything, man. I got to remember what.
Okay, thank you very much. A day planner ain't going to help me remember to buy a computer so that we can get the DAT tapes transferred over, okay? In any event, that's the other little technical stuff. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And also the 20th birthday of the Phil Hendry Show, the 20th birthday. That means we will be 20 years old as a radio show on the 23rd of August. And I remember those very early days of our show, August of 1990. When we were starting out on KVEN in Ventura, it can't be more than 10 miles north of our El Pacifico studio where we are right now. And we were on 1 to 4 in the afternoon, and Margaret Gray and Raj Fanin was the very first of our guests. And that was during Operation Desert Storm.
That's the war in Iraq, right?
Yeah.
Not quite. That was a different one. It was like more of the Gulf War. And then Steve Bozell came along when we moved to Atlanta in 1992, and we went up to Minneapolis in 93, went down to Miami in 94, came out to L.A. in 96, and, you know, then we went national in 99, and we've been national with the exception of 1 year ever since. So coming up on the 23rd of August is our 20th birthday, and we got to do something. I don't know what it is.
Get some tequila or something.
I can't get drunk on the air, man. I don't want to do that, okay?
Well, you got drunk that one time.
I didn't get drunk. It was during our six-day video cast. It was a video cast. It wasn't a radio show, and I didn't get drunk. Thank you very much. I don't know. We'll think of something. Maybe we'll have a big-ass barbecue or something. But, you know, time's wasting, man. This is June. That's 2 months away. We'll figure it out. NAACP calls Hallmark Black Holes graduation card racist. You guys hear this?
Uh-uh.
This is nuts. This is the NAACP. There's a graduation card that was sold at local stores in Southern California, and it's been pulled from shelves after a civil rights group raised concerns about the content. The group claims the card's microspeaker plays a greeting that's racist. Now, I've listened to this, and I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have any problem at all with the NAACP. As a matter of fact, I think they're one of the great organizations in the history of America. They've done great things, but they may be getting a little long in the tooth. They may be getting a little senile because there's nothing, honest to God, there's nothing wrong with this. Maybe it sounds a little kooky because of the speaker. There's a small speaker, and you've probably seen these cards. Robert, did you hear this?
I think it's racism, and I think they got to pull it off.
Pull what off?
I ain't talking about that.
You think this is racist?
Yeah.
All right, well, here is, first of all, this is the actual content from the Hallmark card that the NAACP in Los Angeles finds racist. Since the audio is recorded from a greeting card, the audio is less than optimal. And this is number one, so let's listen.
Hey, world, we're officially putting you on notice.
Yeah.
You better watch out. Is this graduate here? Kick and rear and pig and bang.
This graduate's going to run the world, run the universe, and run everything after that, whatever that is.
And you black holes, you're so ominous.
Congratulations!
Yay! I'm going to take you over the world.
Can you plan it? Watch your back.
You heard the term black holes in there, which is what I heard, and I don't know, Robert.
To me, that sounded like, hey, you black hole. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know what you mean. Have you got ears, man? Have you got ears?
Yeah, I got ears.
When's the last time you had your hearing checked?
I had my hearing checked when I was a kid. I don't need to. Well, that sounds like whore to me.
I'm going to play it again. Now, you look me in the eye and tell me that sounds like whore. Listen.
Hey, world, we're officially...
As a matter of fact, I got a short version of it.
What'd you do?
I got a short version of it. Listen.
And you black holes, you're so ominous.
Can you plan it? Watch your back.
That doesn't sound like holes?
Well, that's different.
That's the same recording.
No, that's a different one, man. You might have monkeyed with it.
Yeah, see, you're being racist.
How am I being racist?
Talk about a monkey.
Oh, will you knock it off? Listen, here is the whole thing, then. Listen, whole thing. Listen.
Hey, world, we're officially putting you on notice.
Yeah.
Talk about a monkey.
Will you shut up? Hold on. Now I couldn't hear it, for crying out loud.
You just said hold.
Yeah, so what?
Well,
you said monkey.
Would you two shut up? Listen.
Hey, world, we're officially putting you on notice.
Yeah.
You better watch out. Is this graduate here? Kick and rear and pig and bang.
This graduate's going to run the world, run the universe, and run everything after that, whatever that is.
And you black holes, you're so ominous.
You know what I'm saying, that.
Wait a minute. That greeting card says this graduate's going to run the world and run the universe, and you black holes, you know.
Now, what's that got to do with that?
Because you talk about the universe.
The universe, man. What has black whore got to do with the universe? Anyway, so here is, this is Leon Jenkins, Minnie Hatley, and one other colleague. They're all from the NAACP in Los Angeles. They held a press conference to slam the racist Hallmark card.
That was very demeaning to African-American women, where they made reference to African-American women as whores, and at the end says, watch your back.
It sounds like a group of children laughing and joking about blackness again. And we do not want to see this ever, ever again.
And you hear the R in there. The R is in there.
You know, this is a sad thing because you people, and I say you people.
Yeah, see, like you call you people?
Oh, yeah. You people at the NAACP, not black people. How's that? I mean, this is embarrassing. It's just like that guy that was talking about black holes in some seminar at a college, and a couple of black guys walked out of there and thought black hole was racist until somebody explained to them what the hell it was meant by black hole. And I'll tell you something, educated black people must be embarrassed. Educated white people are, I don't know.
Well, there ain't too many of them.
So here it is again.
And you black holes.
Oh, that's hole.
Yeah, well, that's a different one.
Oh, my. Listen, here's the whole thing again. You want me to play it again? I'll play it. No, I ain't going to play it again. I'm driving people crazy with this. That's the exact thing. And these people here from the NAACP, I'm telling you, it's one of these embarrassing moments, like that dude that thought black hole was a racist term.
Ain't it?
No, it ain't.
Black hole is something in outer space that sucks everything in.
Yeah. Oh, you're not making that up.
No, I'm not making it up. Yeah, that's it, man. Black hole is something that was made up just to piss you off. It's an outer space term.
Yeah.
Well, what does that mean? I don't understand it.
They call it a black hole because it is a star that's collapsed, okay? It's collapsed because It's burned out. And as it collapses, the center of gravity, the gravity of this thing, becomes so intense, it begins to suck all matter around it into it, to the point where it literally is sucking the matter around it into this hole. So it's a collapsed star. Have you ever seen the Milky Way?
Not a candy bar, right?
No, not the candy bar. Outer space.
I'll get a picture of it, and then you're going to see it.
Look for a picture, will you, bud?
Yeah.
Are you talking about a Milky Way what?
The galaxy.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
See, this is it.
Okay, you want to know why that's a pinwheel?
Yeah, why?
Because that's a black hole in the middle of that thing. The whole galaxy that we live in, not the galaxy, but the galaxy, the Milky Way, we're getting sucked into a black hole.
Bull crap, man.
Well, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's very, very slow. That's why it's pinwheeling around. So all of the matter, and we're on the very, very far edge of it, so it's going to be a long time before it happens to us. But the fact is, matter is getting sucked into that black hole. There was a star that collapsed, and that's what happened.
Well, I believe you, but that's got to be racism.
Black hole is racist.
I think so.
You're an idiot. You know that.
You don't know what it's like to grow up.
Why don't both of you guys shut up? All right, we'll be back with a Colorado man who went on a solo mission to kill Bin Laden. We'll find out if he did or not. Something tells me he didn't. 877-876-PHIL. And coming up, we have a one-off. We'll be talking with Bobby Dooley about Abby Sunderland and how, as Bobby puts it, the high-tech rape of Abby Sunderland didn't take place. Oh, thank God. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil. What takes you so long, bud?
Well, make sure it's in focus.
I said to him to take a picture of me holding the NAACP story so that we could put it on a website, and you got the picture of the story with no me, then you got a picture of me with just a piece of paper, then you got a picture of me with half the paper. Can't you even focus it?
I want to take a very clear shot. The lighting's bad.
Oh, will you get out of here with the lighting, man? You're taking it on an iPhone. Well, anyway, so maybe during the break we'll get a picture of that. 877-876-PHIL, a number here. And don't forget, our website is philhenryshow.com. And I want to mention that we're also on Twitter, twitter.com/philhenryshow. That's our staff Twitter site. And then twitter.com/realphilhenry and facebook.com/philhenry. So we're all over these social networking sites because we're just so bloody social. We're just all that. All right, Colorado man went on a solo mission to kill Bin Laden. Boy, this sounds exciting. This is exciting stuff here.
You got to be nuts, but I'd love to be able to do something like that maybe someday.
No, you don't want to do anything like this, bud. Believe me.
You won't do that.
Why not?
You don't want to go out by yourself into Afghanistan and Pakistan looking for Bin Laden with a sword. You don't want to do that, okay? All that's going to happen to you is you're going to get killed.
Well.
An American man had been detained in the mountains of Pakistan after authorities found him carrying a sword, a pistol, and night vision goggles on a solo mission to hunt down and kill Osama bin Laden. Got to hand it to the guy. Friends and family say construction worker Gary Brooks Faulkner is a devout, good-humored Christian who was on a mission to kill or capture Osama. That's an interesting description for a guy who's out looking to kill a guy. He's a good-humored Christian. A lot of kids grow up and say, I want to be Rambo, you know? Well, he is, said Faulkner's brother, Scott Faulkner, age 43, said his brother made 5 previous trips to Pakistan. You're kidding. The 50-year-old Faulkner, who has a lengthy arrest record.
There you go. I knew there was something kind of squirrely about the guy.
Yeah, I knew this guy was bad. I liked him for that.
You knew he was bad, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway, he's got a lengthy arrest record. He served in Colorado prisons, arrived on June the 3rd in the town of...
Looks like bumhole or...
Give me that, will you? I'll read it. Bombarte. And stayed in a hotel there. He was assigned a police guard, as is common for foreigners visiting remote parts of Pakistan. When he checked out without informing police, officers began looking for him, according to the top police officer in the Chitral region, Mumats Ahmed Khan. That's the top cop there in that region. Faulkner was found late Sunday in a forest. We initially laughed when he told us that he wanted to kill Osama bin Laden, Khan said, but when officers seized the weapons and night vision equipment, our suspicion grew. He said the American was trying to cross into the nearby Afghan region of Nuristan. Chitral and Nuristan are among several rumored hiding places for bin Laden along the mountainous border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Well, bin Laden supposedly has a bodyguard that numbers in the hundreds, if not a thousand, you know.
What, a bodyguard?
Yeah.
How come they have so many?
Because that he needs a lot, man. People want to kill this guy. What do you think? He's, you know, you got to have a bodyguard of like two guys?
Yeah, well, usually all you need is a couple of guys. Like, what about when Puff Daddy goes to a nightclub and stuff?
Yeah, all they have are like two.
Well, he ain't going into a nightclub, is he? Osama bin Laden, he's got everybody in the world wants to kill this guy. Going into a nightclub.
Well, that's all they need.
Well, they don't have... Who wants to kill Puff Daddy, man, other than maybe, you know, half his former girlfriends? This cat goes with his bodyguards to where he... Because he's going into clubs, big wow, all right? Osama bin Laden...
Well, he can't get in a nightclub with that, right?
You're serious, aren't you?
What?
Oh, bin Laden going to a nightclub?
If he wanted to, all I'm saying.
Bin Laden ain't going to get into a nightclub, no, with his 1,000 bodyguards, no. Pakistan's military and intelligence establishment generally deny the possibility that bin Laden is hiding somewhere along the Pakistan-Afghan border, as Western intelligence agencies believe. Now, Faulkner's sister... Deanna Faulkner of Grand Junction, Colorado, said her brother suffers from kidney disease that has left him with only 9% kidney function. But she told the Associated Press that she did not think his illness was his motivation to go to Pakistan. How the hell are you going to do that?
How are you going to go to Pakistan if your kidneys work only like 9% of the time?
That's a good question, man. You know.
Yeah, you're going to have to drink water and everything.
Anyway, Scott Faulkner said his brother was very religious and carried a Bible with him at all times, but wasn't planning to proselytize. Scott Faulkner dropped his brother off at Denver's airport on May the 30th, and the two discussed the possibility Faulkner would not return from his search for bin Laden. So this fruitcake brother told the other brother? What do you guys talk about in that family, man? He talked about why he was so passionate to find bin Laden, Scott Faulkner recalled, adding that his brother retained vivid memories of the September 11th attacks. He's not forgotten. But Scott Faulkner insisted his brother was on a rational mission. He's as normal as you and I, Scott said. He's just very passionate, and as a Christian, he felt when Osama mocked this country after 9/11, and it didn't feel like the military was doing enough, it became his passion, his mission, to track down Osama and kill him or bring him back alive.
They should do a comic book about this guy.
Yeah, no kidding, man. That'd be bitching.
A comic book, huh?
Yeah, this guy's my hero.
Oh, all of a sudden he's your hero. 5 minutes ago, you guys were saying the guy's a nutcase.
Yeah, well, it sounds pretty cool now.
Scott Faulkner said his brother sold all of his tools to finance his trip and was prepared to die in Pakistan. He also said his brother took no weapons and had a valid visa for Pakistan. Scott Faulkner hoped his brother wouldn't be charged with a crime. On Tuesday, Gary Faulkner was being questioned by intelligence officials in Peshawar, Pakistan's main northwestern city. He has not been charged with any wrongdoing. Khan said Faulkner told investigators he was angry after the September the 11th attacks. I think Osama is responsible for bloodshed in the world and I want to kill him, Khan quoted Mr. Faulkner as saying. Asked why he thought he had a chance of tracing bin Laden, Faulkner replied, God is with me, and I'm confident I'll be successful in killing him. This is the police quoting Mr. Faulkner. He said police confiscated a small amount of hashish, naturally, and...
Well, why do you say naturally?
Well, I mean, look, man, there had to be something with this cat. A small amount of hashish, enough for a single joint from Faulkner. He's a passionate Christian. He's going over to kill Osama, and oh, yeah, he's scoring... He scored himself just a little sliver of hash. Guy's got night goggle visions. He's got a sword. He's got a pistol. He's going over to kill bin Laden. He's rational as you or me. He's got a little bit of hash. Cat's like, he's got 9% kidney function. Maybe they ought to do a comic book about the guy.
They'll do a TV show about this guy to get back, man. You watch.
You know what? You having just said that, Robert, I guarantee you money. that there's somebody out there in Hollywood land that just heard you say that, and they're thinking about contacting this guy. I got money that says they'll try to get, they'll option this guy's story.
What are you talking about?
This cat's story is going to get optioned by a producer.
Oh, they'll make a movie about it.
That's right. This is a great movie. They'll make a movie about this guy. And if they haven't done it, I'm going to go do it tomorrow. I'm going to contact the family. See, having just said that, they'll be rushing for it.
No, you'll never get a chance.
That's right. All right, coming up, Bobby Dooley is up. She'll be talking about Abby Sunderland and just the bad treatment received by Ms. Sutherland and her family at the hands of the media and a lot of, quote, fat housewives, end quote. Next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, yes, Don Rickles is on Jimmy Kimmel.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL and the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. I just saw a little tiny bit there of Don Rickles, who still makes me laugh. I think he makes everybody laugh. I don't care how old you are. Bobby Dooley is going to join us here from the Western Estates Homeowners Association for just a couple of minutes here. We're talking about Abby Sunderland. Bobby, I know you took great interest in the story. What I have here is, Ms. Dooley, you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay. Did you see this?
Well, there's an awful lot of news about Abby. I don't know which story you're referring to.
This is a teen sailor. Abby Sunderland came to her parents' defense on Tuesday in her first interview since going, since getting rescued for her solo sailing trip halfway across the world.
Yes, I did hear that, and I was very gratified to hear that she's not letting her parents take all of this criticism alone. I don't know whether Abby was aware of how close she really came to this high-tech rape that we wrote the article about.
All right, well, hold on for a minute. I'll get to that in a minute, this high-tech rape that you're calling it, which is interesting. I think that a lot of people are judging me by the standards they have for their teens and other teens that they know and thinking she's exactly like them, Sunderland told the Associated Press. They don't understand that I've sailed my whole life and I do know what I'm doing out there.
Well, Phil, I think that's exactly the case. And the reason why we called it the high-tech rape of Abby Sunderland in our blog is because that's really what was going on in this country for 48 hours, and it was spurred on mostly by women. This was a phenomenon that I'd never seen before. You know, adult women gathering around a high-tech pool room in a, you know, a figurative pool room, if you will, or a virtual pool room, and Abby Sunderland is being pushed down onto a virtual table.
Abby Sunderland is being pushed down onto a virtual table. Well, then who are the virtual guys that are doing this?
Well, it is a combined group. The Housewives of America, the soccer moms, the frustrated sailors, the 40 and 50-year-old men who are yacht club members, but they've never sailed past 3 miles out. You know the type. And so they all gathered in this pool room and pushed Abby Sutherland down onto the table. And it was only because a virtual or a make-believe bartender called a make-believe police. And
I don't understand it. Make-believe police?
I'm talking about the high-tech rape of Abby Sunderland. You understand what I mean by that?
I understand what Clarence Thomas meant when he said high-tech lynching.
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about.
You're not scared of high-tech
rich,
you're not scared of high-tech lynch. Only Abby Sunderland was not black.
And she wasn't a man.
Yes,
yeah,
not black or a man.
Other than that, she's just like Clarence Thomas, huh?
Yeah, they better speaking, yeah, on account of
the
high-tech.
See, so, I'm sorry. The high-tech rape of Abby Sunderland is the name of the blog.
No, I understand that, and I read your blog, and I know it got some attention because you're complaining that the media and the American people didn't care what damage they did to Abby Sunderland. They were going to pick over this girl and her family immediately, and I felt that that point was very well made.
But you didn't read the entire blog about how she was pushed down on this...
Yeah, like a holocraft pool table.
like in a holograph or holodeck. I think, yeah, holodeck.
A holodeck? Are you talking about in Star Trek?
Yes. And,
well, it's make-believe.
But it's make-believe.
All right, so Abby Sunderland was pushed down on a make-believe pool table in a make-believe pool room by what, make-believe people?
No.
The bartender was make-believe.
The bartender who called the make-believe police. See, Phil, you're being a little silly here.
No, I don't think I'm being silly. You know.
No, you are being silly because what we're saying, the American people, the media in this country, the soccer moms, the frustrated 40-year-old sailors with their white shoes, and their Captain Kangaroo hat. You don't?
Yeah, there we go, the Kangaroo hat.
The Captain Kangaroo outfit. Those are the frustrated people. And so what they did is they attempted to violate this girl as if she were in, all right, the pool room of a yacht club, if you want to be literal.
Yeah, that'll work better.
By the way, who are you? You're Mr. Dooley?
What?
Are you Mr. Dooley?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's my husband.
What can you tell him? Because all I hear is this yelling in the background. All right.
I'm sorry about that.
Steve, just, I got it, you know.
No,
I've got it. All right, Phil?
Okay, so, and so who is the make-believe cop?
Well, the make-believe cop, I think, is simply the Sunderlands themselves. They stood up for themselves. They said, we are not going to allow our daughter to be turned into something you trade for cigarettes. We're not going to allow our daughter to be turned into something you trade for shots and beers. We're going to pick our daughter up, throw her into the back of the virtual pickup truck, and speed off with her in it.
Yeah.
Their virtual pickup truck.
Well, I don't know if they have a real one or not.
Well, all right. Reading here in this article, Sunderland's parents...
What, are you reading from our blog?
Yeah, that's the article. We don't read that.
Read our blog.
No, I want to read the article because this is the Associated Press article because this is making sense. I don't know what you guys are talking about when you say thrown into a virtual pickup truck. Sunderland's parents, Lawrence and Marianne, have come under fire for allowing their 16-year-old daughter to attempt to sail around the world. Now, that fire that they've come under, that's what you call the virtual rape.
That is exactly right. That is the high-tech. We didn't call it virtual. High-tech.
The high-tech rape.
That is the high-tech assault of Abby Sunderland and her parents. And as I put it in the blog, and I thought I put it very well, America is a drunken, amyl nitrate popping, just this savage that has tied Abby Sunderland to a tree. And America has collapsed into a pool of its own vomit, and Abby Sunderland has escaped.
Yeah, past all the popper ampules.
Yeah, over the popper ampules and the empty rum bottles. So that's what we wrote.
Oh, you didn't write anything about a billiard room.
I didn't say billiard room.
I mean a pool room.
A pool room, yeah.
You didn't write that?
No. That was something I came up with right now.
No, we wrote about the fact that she was tied to a palm tree and America was like a drunk and, you know, who was doing poppers and rum.
And tied her to a tree and ravished her all night long.
Yes.
And then she got away.
Yes, she untied herself and ran to the jungle. And then I put dot, 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 the jungle and freedom, dot, dot, dot.
Okay, did anybody read this?
How dare you?
Did anybody read it?
Well, I know I did. I don't know how many people read this thing. I know it was brought to my attention that you'd written it. And I was just curious if you got any, you know.
We got an awful lot of people making comments. I'm not going to read them all. But I think everyone understood that we were on Abby's side, and we're so thankful that the multiple ravishing that she went through at the hands of America, and we mean it figuratively, she wasn't really hurt. We're glad she survived it.
She's going to have to go to rape camp. But I mean, like,
well, make-believe.
Make-believe rape camp. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Wait, are you hanging up?
You know, but the most trivial, asinine thing I've ever heard in my life. It's one thing for you guys to use that in a blog. It's one thing, but you guys are going into pool rooms and on beaches and
you're hanging up
and everywhere else. All right, 877-876-PHIL, a world famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil. Phil Hendry.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. Now, I got something really cool here. Reality TV scams, the worst reality show prizes ever. You know how they tell you on America's Got Talent that if you win $1 million? Well, you know how when they tell you on Hell's Kitchen, you get to be like the head chef at a restaurant for season 7? It was Ramsay's new restaurant in London. Well, wait till you hear what you actually get. But first, did you know that these people were or are or was? Well, I guess once a Marine, you're always a Marine. That's what they say.
Yeah, the Marines are brothers forever on account of what they said that in like...
Yeah, in Full Metal Jacket.
Right. In Full Metal Jacket, they said you're a Marine forever. All right. Did you know that these guys were Marines then? They're no longer in uniform, but they were. Don and Phil Everly, the Everly Brothers. They had a string of hit singles, Bye Bye Love, all that stuff. You know the songs. Wake Up Little Susie, which was, by the way, considered a very scandalous song in a simpler time. They enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve. They were stationed at Camp Pendleton in 1961-62. They frequently entertained their company with impromptu concerts. They appeared in their dress blue uniforms on the Ed Sullivan Show and performed the song Crying in the Rain. They were Marines. Guess who else was a Marine? Bozo the Clown.
Yeah, but not the real clown. The guy.
Yes, the guy. The clown was not in the Marines.
Well, you got to let people know about that.
Hey, everybody. Thank you, bud. Bozo himself was not in the Marines. The guy who played Bozo was.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You guys feel better?
Well, you do have to say it.
Yeah, okay. Bob Bell was arguably the most popular. Bell put on the blue suit and the red wig for WGN television in Chicago for 25 years. He was nearly blind in one eye. Bell managed to enlist in the Marines after graduating from high school by memorizing the eye chart. But he was later discharged because of his disability, and he joined the Navy before embarking on a career in children's television. The gravelly voice he developed for his portrayal of Bozo was the inspiration also for Krusty the Clown on The Simpsons. So Bozo, the most famous, was a Marine. Guess who else was a Marine? Captain Kangaroo. Bob Keeshan, who was on television. My generation remembers Captain Kangaroo. In fact, didn't Bobby Dooley just... What did she say?
Yeah, she said that... She said somebody had a kangaroo uniform on when they were raping her.
She didn't say that.
What'd she say?
I don't know. She mentioned Captain... Anyway, Captain Kangaroo, prior to the Clarabelle the Clown on the Howdy Doody show, and then kindly Captain Kangaroo, Bob Keeshan was a trained killer. An urban legend claimed he fought alongside actor Lee Marvin on Iwo Jima. That is false. Keeshan never saw combat because the war was over by the time he was enlisted in the Marine Corps. Lee Marvin did indeed see combat as a Marine, but that was during the Battle of Saipan, not Iwo Jima. And I believe Lee Marvin was wounded, and if memory serves what I read, I think he was shot in the rear end.
Shot in the butt.
Right, he got shot in the butt. Drew Carey, actor, comedian, game show host Drew Carey, served 6 years in the United States Marine Corps Reserve. When Time Magazine asked him what events in life made him who he is, Carey replied, "The Marine Corps. It instilled a great sense of discipline that I can call on when I need it." Obviously, he enjoyed being a, quote, jarhead, end quote, because he was kept in his Marine crew. He's kept his Marine crew cut throughout his stage and TV career. Pat Robertson was a Marine.
Well, that figures.
Why would that figure, man? Pat Robertson, just because you're a Marine doesn't mean you're a bonehead.
Yeah, you're a jarhead.
Evangelist Pat Robertson was indeed a devil dog who served as an officer during the Korean War. Robertson claims to have been in combat, but several veterans refute his record. They allege that his father, Senator Absalom Robertson, pulled strings to ensure that he never saw action against the enemy. I don't know. This seems a very strange political note to put into this. If you're doing a list, you're doing a list. Why do you have to slam the guy, too? Maybe he never saw combat. You know, maybe he's a lying sack of crap. I mean, is that what this is about? And I ain't a Pat Robertson fan, but anyway. Number four, Lee Trevino, the professional golfer known as the Happy Mex, the Super Mex. Lee Trevino carried an M14 as a Marine before he carried a 9-iron as a professional golfer, enlisting in 1957. He was in the Corps for 4 years. Trevino claims that his superior skills made him such a popular golfing partner among the officers that he was promoted to Lance Corporal. Another guy that was a Marine was James Carville. He's the strategy guy and the tactician behind the Clinton campaign. He was 2 years in the Marine Corps. And then, of course, he later came out to become a political campaigner. Gene Hackman, the great actor, was a United States Marine. He has since quietly retired from acting in the year 2000, they say. He was a Marine field radio operator before launching his film career that included roles, as you know, in the film Behind Enemy Lines and Crimson Tide. And finally, number one, guess who was a former Marine?
I'm waiting, man.
Shaggy.
No kidding.
Shaggy, the Jamaican-American singer. Orville Burrell, a.k.a. Shaggy, served as a field artillery cannon crewman in the 10th Marines during Operation Desert Storm. And it was while leading marching cadences that he developed his vocal talents. And Shaggy went on to have an international career, as you know, with big hits such as "Oh Carolina, It Wasn't Me." He continues to perform throughout the world. So there you go, man.
Is there an interesting about who's a Marine and everything like that? Was you?
No, I was not a Marine.
Was your brother?
No.
What about your dad?
No.
Your mom?
Yeah, shut up. My mom.
Well, I thought you said your dad was in the Army and everything.
My dad was in the Army, yeah.
Well, then why'd you say no?
He wasn't in the Marine Corps.
Oh.
Will
you spit it out? What are you trying to say?
Did they have Marines there?
Where?
Canada.
I don't know, man. Maybe they did. You mean Canadian Marines?
Yeah, probably not as good, though.
I don't know. Maybe, I guess. If they got a Navy, then they must have Marines, because the Marines are a fighting arm. They're the infantry arm of the Navy, see? So they all, you know, like they're like in the Navy.
Who is?
Marines are.
I don't get it. How do you figure that they're in the Navy?
Don't you ever hear those guys say aye, aye and all that jazz?
Yeah.
See?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
See? That's how you know, man. They go, aye, aye, sir.
So that means that, yeah, they're Navy.
Right. Jesus. All right, so anyway, reality TV. I thought this was great, man. Dig this. You know that show America's Got Talent you guys are always telling me to watch that I can't stand?
Yeah.
You know how they say it's a $1 million prize?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You know what you actually get?
You got to get $1 million if they tell you what you're going to get.
You get $1 million if you wait 40 years. $375,000 is what you get right now. Huh? Having a ridiculous or Vegas-worthy talent pays off for winners of America's Got Talent. It just takes half of their life. The prize is technically an annuity that matures over 40 years as the closing credits reveal. Like lottery winners, talent winners can take a smaller prize up front, around $375,000, depending upon interest rates, but otherwise they receive just $25,000 a year. There are other jobs in Las Vegas that probably pay more than that, though they're not quite primetime TV material. So get a load of that. Only 25 G's a year, or you take the 375 up front.
That blows, man. They ought to tell you that. They should tell you that.
They do. They say it in the credits. Number two, Hell's Kitchen on Fox TV. The prize, a job as a head chef at a restaurant for season 7. It was Ramsay's new restaurant in London. Well, guess what you actually get? You get a role in the kitchen suited to your experience.
So you don't get to be in the show?
You're in the show, and you get the job, but it's not as a head chef. Besides getting yelled at by Gordon Ramsay for weeks and having to endure working in a kitchen with morons, the producers have stocked the cast to ensure Ramsay has someone to really scream at. The winners at the show tend to get something less than what's announced. Its first three winners receive less impressive, less involved roles, while the first winner receives restaurant equipment instead of time in the UK being mentored by Ramsay. Last year's winner, Dave Levy, was promised a job as a head chef at a restaurant in Whistler, British Columbia, but its executive chef openly mocked the prize, calling the eventual winner just an employee. So you're not a chef, man. You get to work in a kitchen.
What, like washing dishes or something?
Well, it's probably better than that, but...
Yeah. You're like what they call a prep chef, you know?
What's that?
Yeah, cut up like onions and everything.
A prep chef?
Yeah, it's the guy that prepares stuff. He prepares stuff.
I don't get it.
If the chef is going to make a dish, and he needs to have an onion chopped up and...
That's the guy that chops it up.
Yeah, that's like a prep guy. All right. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. The prize, a donation to the winner's charity, King of the Jingle title. A donation to the winner's charity, King of the Jingle title. What you actually get, not even the winner knew. All right. And then finally we have here a brand new house. What the hell, man? What's the name of the show? Oh, The Apprentice. The prize is a year-long job as Donald Trump's apprentice and a salary of $250,000 a year, which you actually get a job promoting Donald Trump. The Apprentice's title is actually its prize. The title and job is Donald Trump's apprentice. They actually got those jobs and an office in Trump Tower, but as Newsweek reported, after the first two winners had worked for Trump, the $250,000 a year gig are less about climbing the corporate ladder and more about using their apprentice celebrity to promote Donald Trump. American Idol, the prize, $350,000 for the first album and up to $1 million for the sixth, which you get an awful first single.
That's not true.
Well, while the prize for winning is a recording contract that awards an increasing amount of money for each subsequent album, American Idol retains the right to sign any of its finalists. In addition, the person who receives the most votes doesn't necessarily have the best album sales. Just ask Ruben Studdard compared to his runner-up Clay Aiken or Taylor Hicks, his season's fourth-place finalist Chris Daugherty. He's done much better than Taylor Hicks. The show hasn't done much to help them, giving the winner a treacly first single to release. American Idol has had winners become successful, but Kelly Clarkson and Carrie Underwood are the only two who approach true Idol status. Phil Hendry Show, produced by Jason Rance, technical director Ralph Rodriguez. And don't forget, Dan Northcraft, our screener. Later.
Phil Hendry.